bright star. Would I were steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendor hung aloft the night, but watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient, sleepless eremite, the moving waters at their priest-like task of pure ablution round earth's human shores, or gazing on the new soft fallen mask of snow upon the mountains and the moors. No, still yet steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever its sweet swell and fall, awake forever with a sweet unrest, still to hear her tender taken breath, and so live ever, or else swoon to death. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the appointed and anointed hour, the hour for the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Yes, dear fiends, if you've been waiting for this moment to come around, wait no further. These forces that you have sought to audit are in operation and occurring now. Yes, now, as the almond trims its smoking wick, dropping small flames to light the candled grass, this is the show, its current and ready incarnation, for this day, hour, moment, and evidence on this bank and shoal of time. Welcome, all etherettes, rocket rookies, and fans and friends of what we do, an ongoing project driven by its own momentum through perilous seas in fairy lands forlorn, beneath the lowered skies and among jagged rocks that can rip and tear at the bottom of a vessel. We come through safe because what we prevent you from missing is worthless and desired at the present instance by none. And there is much to consider tonight here on our program. The future of such enterprises as this, the present of our national political and psychic distress, the past with all its richness and hidden cryptic lore and memory, and the eternity that descends like the shroud of the heavens over all. Tomorrow creeps in its petty pace from day to day, to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools to dusty death. Out, brief candle, life is but a walking shadow, a poor player who struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. passage from Seneca, we read that Thales of Miletus taught that the earth floats in a surrounding sea like a ship, and that these waters, when tossed and driven by the tempests, are the cause of earthquakes. Historians or mythologists of 8th century Japan offer us a rather different seismological system. In their sacred scriptures, it is written, "Now beneath the fertile land of reed plains lay a kami in the form of a great catfish, and by its movement it caused the earth to quake, till the great deity of Deer Island thrust his sword deep into the earth and transfixed the kami's head. So now, when the evil kami is violent, he puts forth his hand and lays it upon the sword, till the kami becomes quiet. The hilt of this sword, carved in granite, projects some 3 feet out of the ground, near the shrine of Kashima. In the 17th century, a feudal lord dug for 6 days without reaching the tip of the blade. In popular belief, the Jinshin Uo, or earthquake fish, is an eel 700 miles long that holds Japan on its back. It runs from north to south, its head lying beneath Kyoto and its tail beneath Awamori. Some logical thinkers have argued for the reverse of this order, for it is in the south of Japan that earthquakes are more frequent, and it is easier to equate this with the lashing of the eel's tail. This animal is not unlike the Bahamut of Muslim tradition, or the Midgard Sormer of the Eddas. In certain regions, the earthquake fish is replaced with little apparent advantage by the earthquake beetle, or Jinshin Mushi. It has a dragon's head, 10 spider legs, and a scaly body. It is an underground, not an undersea creature. Well, the master. And that's the one about hot dogs. Who?
Hot dogs.
The motion pictures.
We all know who said
they, the microphone. It is live.
Oh, yes,
a mighty hot dog is our Lord. It's happened. It's
putting
been
on the dog, eh?
Hormel sausage factory was churning it out. But I'm here with Puzzling Evidence, and we're going
to do a live
show.
A live.
So don't
this is a really cheap microphone.
Cheap. You're telling me, man. Those are recorded birds that you're listening to. All
these are the ones.
These aren't the ones that were filched from the other studio. These aren't the microphones you're looking for.
They came a little bit later.
I'm willing to believe that. I'm willing to believe your story. These microphones. I'm going to take a look at a private peekaboo picture, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, what's her phone number? These are Mama, buy me that. Oh,
they
baby.
Should.
Wow.
I'm not really prepared to offer the call us up number, but we're going to have that in future.
No, you can't call us up.
I realize.
Let's go over that again. You can't call us up. Not at all. Not at all. This station does not maintain a call-in number. It did it one time. Now don't ask me why it does it no more. But you can still ask me, Dr. Howland, all questions on the Ask Dr. Hal show. Yes, you can. All you need to do is use the U.S. Postal System, what's left of it. Write your question on an ordinary piece of paper. Readability is a plus. Enclose it, fold it in a recognizable form with a small premium for me, Dr. Howlandowl. Then send it to the Ask Dr. Hal Show, 3227 22nd Street, San Francisco, California, 94110-3006. That's the Ask Dr. Hal Show, 3227 22nd Street, San Francisco, California, 94110-3006, and you shall be well rewarded by receiving my answer gratis on this program. I would be remiss in not mentioning that, there is the Ask Dr. Hal Show, the home edition, coming up. It's on Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. 6 p.m. That's right, it's 9 p.m. Eastern, but that's when our show will begin and cease, and then again begin with tremulous cadence, slow, and bring the eternal note of sadness in. So hold on to your hats, fasten your seat belts, and prepare for more of the same.
And you saw Kurt Kirsteiner and Ivan Stang.
I saw Kurt Kirsteiner and Ivan Stang, indeed, and Reverend Fox and Reverend Pease.
I saw him.
Really took care of Biz, which was good, because somebody
the Pease Biz.
And Stang was relieved of the burden of command.
Yes.
Just another puppet or actor on the stage. But that meant
he needs his rest.
Bust his chops.
His really. Beauty sleep.
I can breathe easy. Yeah. I can breathe easy.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, how'd you get right in here without the suit?
Because it's not locked. Okay, turn down two.
What's
I
this?
Tell you what happened at the end of news camp. Okay, the land of Id.
What about that nudist camp?
It was a carnival. Oh, it was a circus. It was,
delightful.
A subgenius event. But
it was okay.
Without a lot of a drama, because everybody wanted the subs to be there.
That's right. We weren't bums.
Yes,
we were honored guests.
So I have no idea. See, you've got your plug. Of course, you've got to plug the male into the female there.
All right, let's not get
if
too technical here.
If there's a spare hole, give it a try in the orgiastic plug-in.
The orgy dome.
Syndrome of this station. Should
yes,
I get
right
out
now.
Of the way?
What is it?
Hell, don't ask me to do that.
Oh,
Come on.
We're having plug-in problems.
Okay, put this one
hair in here.
Keep falling out.
But we're going to figure it out here.
See, it fits.
Hold on, folks.
You're getting into
the greatest show on earth. The greatest show on earth. Yes, that would be me.
But the adjective feisty doesn't come from Frederick.
Certainly not.
It's just one of those weird coincidences. Like, for example, the Rockola jukebox.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks,
what about that?
Cool, Rockola.
No, it was invented by an Italian guy named Rockola.
Yeah, like the Rockola, only Rockola, and he didn't rock out either.
And how come the E is before the I in that word?
In Rockola or Feisty?
Feisty.
It's just one of those exceptions that makes the English language the wonderful idiosyncratic thing that it was, or used to be, before everybody started sabotaging the pronoun department.
Grr. So, yes, I was amused on the way over listening to the show and hearing the wonderful make-out sounds.
Yeah, right, from everybody making out next
door. I'm very sorry that those sounds were...
No, not those make-out sounds. The other make-out sounds.
Not from the make-out room.
I wasn't making out with anybody here.
From the make-out tomb.
How did you make out, Al?
Well, I didn't make out that well.
Really well. Not that well.
Yeah, I think when I came in, you were getting
ready
to talk.
I was dreaming about a beautiful
nudist
person who I am. I love, but I dare not mention it to her.
Well,
it might ruin everything.
They generally put on their pants to have lunch, but
well, you can do that too. You don't drop hot food on your Johnson.
The females were
clothed.
You wouldn't expect it.
Right?
They were like the stereotypical females you would meet in some movie.
Nudist camp. Yeah, they were nude at the nudist camp. That was their way.
Their way. Behaved, but they were also...
It made certain things easier, like the baptism, for example. They were already unclad when I submerged them and poured the sacred waters over them.
And it's called shirt cocking.
No, I've never been to
that. I've never heard about that, eh?
That's something that used to exist. And
still does.
Our friend created a pants cannon that you could fire at.
Kimrick Smythe created it. Fire a pair of pants at some guy walking around with his junk on display.
But the female side of that is called Daisy Duckin.
I don't know why we're going over this, but yes, it's far more comely for a female to be unclothed below the waist. It can be a very stylish
statement. That Huey, Dewey, and Louie came out of. Nephews, indeed.
Yes, it was Daisy, all right.
Are actually the unacknowledged parents of these minor cartoons.
Mickey and Minnie gave birth to Minnie gave birth to Morty and Ferdy.
Come on, he's their dad.
How about
Woody Woodpecker?
Is the father of Knothead
and
Splinter.
And Ferdy, no doubt they came through the birth canal of Minnie Mouse. Anyway,
yes,
these women would be naked below the waist, but extremely well-dressed above the waist, and you kind of got used to it. But it's a strange...
We shouldn't be estranged from such a thing.
A strange fashion sense. But you know how it is when you're human... You can get used to anything. So that happened. We did a lot of shows. But I enjoy that. former home of the so-called human race, which we call Earth. That is to say, Earth 18.
The home of monsters. For it was on just such a night as this when Victor Frankenstein brought his creation from the realm of nothingness and unknowing into full-fledged life. He had no assistant. He did it on his own. Oh, my goodness. Oh, goodness gracious. His notes were supposed to be here. I can't find them. Frankenstein Records. Oh yeah, they've got a good beat. You can dance to it. You see, as you may already have read in the newspapers, a most amazing discovery has been made in this most peaceful of countries. It seems that Dr. Victor Frankenstein, once thought to be a character in a story, did actually exist and created what we have come to call his monster. The purpose of this meeting today is to hear for the first time the actual voice of the monster. Strange as it may seem, Dr. Frankenstein, so far ahead of his time in so many ways, was able to make crude recordings of the monster's voice. We talked to the Frankenstein monster today. Let's see what the monster has to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the Great Hall of the Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland. As you have already read in the newspapers, a most amazing discovery has been made in this most peaceful of countries. It seems that Dr. Victor Frankenstein, once thought to be a character in a story, did actually exist and created what we have come to call his monster. The purpose of this meeting today is to hear, for the first time, the actual voice of the monster. Strange as it may seem, Dr. Frankenstein made crude recordings of the monster's voice. The machine had to be rebuilt from Frankenstein's plans under the direction of Dr. Heinrich Eronius, the famed electronics engineer and dean of the university here. Many of the scientists who have come today are convinced that this is a hoax, but are here only because of the reputation of Dr. Eronius. The machine stands before us on the stage. It's a huge thing looking something like a bad dream out of a science fiction story. Two speakers are on either side of it. The recordings themselves are now being brought in. They look like oversized tape reels. A technician is now placing one on the machine. And Dr. Eronius signals for silence. The lights are going down. The red indicator light on the machine has just gone on. Beep. And we are about to hear Frankenstein's monster speak for the first time.
Why does he do this? What is it that he has on his... What is that he has on my head? Why must he hurt me? Oh, no. Radio. Get me that way, Dr. Frankenstein. I know your name. I hate your name. Yes. Yes. I am your creature. But which one of us is the horror that scares little children? Is it me? Or is it the man that made me? Who had evil in his mind to create the awful thing that lies here? Lies waiting to get free and to kill you. To kill another notch. It'll do no good. I have time. All the time I need to put an end to you. Strange. Strange to have thoughts and to be so different from the little ones I see. The ones that scream and run from me. Strange to know why I frighten them. But not so strange to want to crush them, to feel them. My hands, tighten my fingers and see them die. What is there about remembering? Can the little ones, the humans, remember the night they came into the world? The monster can. There was darkness. Did he make me from? From what grave did I come? Of what evil mixture was I compounded? In me, the dead past of murderers comes to life. I have the strength of many men. I have to find him. I have to see the one that gave me life. There's no place to hide, Dr. Frankenstein. No door to keep you from me. Out in here, Dr. Frankenstein? Can't be far from me. No place is far from me. Me. Safe for now, Dr. Frankenstein. But I will come for you. I am your death, Dr. Frankenstein, your master. I have but one purpose: to end your life. Escape if you can, Dr. Frankenstein! What do you call your monster? You never gave me a name, but I have yours. I am called Frankenstein's monster. What a name you've added to the ghosts and the ghouls, the things that haunt and frighten, to the phantoms of the mind. But I am real. See? See? It hurts. I feel. I live.
I speak.
I get my words. I am the monster tied to you forever. The hell that can only free you by giving you death.
What a ham.
It's too easy for you. Too kind. Too gentle.
No.
While you live, you suffer. I see now that's my purpose, my only revenge. Frankenstein! I give you the gift of time to understand the horror you've created. And for myself, I will amuse myself with terror and murder.
That ends the first of what I can only call the tape recordings of the monster's voice. The technicians are threading another spool into the machine, and
these are metal,
the second part
not
of
really
this amazing
tape.
Voice from the past. From the recordings, it's obvious that the monster has broken loose and is now free to rampage through the peaceful Swiss countryside. The doctor is signaling for silence.
Silencio.
Machine started. We are now going to hear again the innermost thoughts of Dr. Frankenstein's ghastly creation.
I remember that night. I left your house, Frankenstein. And fear walked in front of me to frighten mindless beasts. Loving, touching, mother, father, child touching, not for me. Shall I wait until they sleep? Or is the horror twice as horrible when it comes out of nowhere?
Stop! You know not what you do.
Stop me!
Big clumsy oaf.
That was the first senseless, they called it. But it wasn't. There was reason, but enough to lead them to you, Dr. Frankenstein. What glory in killing if you cannot share in it? It's not an easy thing to be a
the guillotine
monster,
for him.
To be hated and feared. To be alone. But I'm not alone, am I? I have you, Dr. Frankenstein. I'm your child. Why do you step back from me? Come closer. Closer. Too easy to tear you, to crush you, to trap you into the stone floor. Not good enough for you. Too quick, too simple. You must live as I live alone. Hated and hated. That's punishment. You tried to stop me, remember? So little faith in your own creation. But I stopped you. Did it hurt? Feel pain. I picked you up. Remember? How I felt to have your life in my hands. For a moment, I was your judge, your jury, your executioner. But no, I didn't condemn you. Not then. If you died, what would I have to live for? What a weak, helpless thing you are. I saw you lying there, eyes half closed, making believe you were unconscious. I knew you were watching, so I became your mindless monster again. With no purpose but to kill. But I had a plan, Lewis. You were going to be alone as I was alone. And when I finished, there will only be the two of us. And then, Dr. Frankenstein, I'll follow you to the end of the earth. And when I have you... I must kill, kill, kill. So that we can be alone, Dr. Frankenstein, I have decided that the world must be emptied of its people. I have plenty of work.
That ends the second recording. There is an increasing air of uneasiness here in the hall. I notice that the lights have been turned up brightly, and the scientists seem to have taken to looking behind them. The monster's terrifying indictment of Dr. Frankenstein is being taken seriously, and there is a great deal of speculation about what is going to happen next. The tape is ready now. The lights have gone down just slightly.
Kill, kill, kill.
So pretty, so soft. What can a monster love? Why couldn't she understand? I spoke to her. I told her how I felt. She wouldn't listen. She kept trying to scream. She tried to get away. I couldn't help it. I tried to hold her. The life went out of her. I'm a monster. Yes. But I wanted to undo what I had done. I want to see her moving and breathing again. And in this whole world, there was one man who could help me. You, Dr. Frankenstein. I was willing to give up all thoughts of revenge. If you could bring her back to life, I carried her back to you. I prayed that nothing would happen to you. I wanted you safe so that you could help me and bring her back to me. And then I would go away with her and never bother you again.
Yeah.
Or hurt another human being again, a bargain. All I wanted was to make a bargain. And I forgot for that one little second of time who I was, what I was, and why I was alive. You didn't let me forget. I came back. I showed you the girl. And you called me fiend from hell. I begged, I pleaded, but you couldn't understand me. And in my concern for the girl I had killed, I let you strap me down. I thought you were going to help. So I went to this metal couch and let you put this machine on my head while she lay crumpled on the stone floor. Why do you... you hurt me this way? What is this thing on my head? Kill me now!
It's called the Cosmic Diffuser. Just let me loosen these straps a little bit.
Why do you look at me that way?
Well,
that noise.
You complained.
Did you hear that, Frankenstein?
You can do all sorts of things. You are a full-fledged individual.
They come to find me to destroy the monster.
Yes, with their torches and pitchforks and so on. They're dependable.
The man that made it. I can save you, Frankenstein. Let me loose, and they won't hurt you. That's reserved for me.
No, I think they will hurt me.
Up.
And they'll be happy to see you fastened down like this.
Smell that. Untie me. They're burning the house.
He doesn't like
Let
fire.
Let me go, Frankenstein. The fire. Come back. No. No. Not alone. Come back. Frankenstein, come back. I wasn't made to die like this. Frankenstein, don't leave me to burn. Which one of us is the monster now? I will not die before you, Dr. Frankenstein. You made me too strong for chains. I think I died in the fire.
It was necessary to make him big because of the smallness of the part.
With
slight help, too.
I'm your monster, and I'm coming for you. But where?
Seems single-minded.
When?
Obsessed.
Change your name. Change your face.
My fight.
But I'll find you.
Yeah, yeah.
No one.
There goes the crockery. Well, it would be me, but I think I'm out of order here. I should be seated right next to where I am. Here, take it down.
11. An hour left of midnight. My last hour alive. And I have to put this all down. One hour left to tell the story of how I found Count Dracula. Why did it have to be me? Something dragged me down there.
Dragula. Get it? No, Dracula's problems are different and must be addressed at another time. Such a fleshy and living creature is that monster. And Victor really did not think past his incredible mastery of his specialty. All the deaths caused by the monster, why not bring them back with your special method? That would be a good demonstration of its usefulness, outweighing the antics of the monster. And why didn't you give him a name? Because you didn't give the Frankenstein monster a name, he ended up with your name. People call him Frankenstein, don't they? And not Frankenstein Jr. either, that's somebody else. I knew a nice lady named Flower Frankenstein, and what a flower she was. Wonder what happened to her. In the meantime,
We are, though we may not know it, in the realm of story, of myth and myth-making. And a myth is as good as a hit. Yak, 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 yak. Through the ages, the basilisk, also known as the cockatrice, grows increasingly ugly and horrendous until today it is forgotten. Its name comes from the Greek and means little king. To the elder Pliny, in Book 8, line 33, it was a serpent bearing a bright spot in the shape of a crown on its head. Dating from the Middle Ages, it becomes a four-legged cock with a crown, yellow feathers, wide thorny wings, and a serpent's tail, ending either in a hook or in another cock's head. The change in its image is reflected in a change in its name. Chaucer, in the Persons' Tale, speaks of the basilicock. If I may quote, "The basilicock sleeth folk by the venom of his citer." One of the plates illustrating Aldrovandi's Natural History of Serpents and Dragons, an illuminating book, gives the basilisk scales instead of feathers, and the use of eight legs, according to the younger Edda. Odin's horse, Sleipnir, also had eight legs. Well, this seems to run against every possible understanding of biology, of vertebrate paleontology, of the morphology of living creatures, of vertebrates. No vertebrate has six legs. All vertebrates are basically from a quadruped mold. Oh, really? Well, what about evolution? What about the robin fish? This delightful and beautiful fish has the usual number of fins and is an accomplished swimmer, which is no great distinction for a fish. But she has done something else as well. She has evolved six legs to run around on the ocean bottom. Six strange insect-looking legs. Don't ever short guess, short cheat, short change nature. What remains constant about the basilisk is the deadly effect of its stare and its venom. Danger! Danger! The Gorgon's eyes turned living beings into stone. Lucan tells us that from the blood of one of them all the serpents of Libya sprang. The asp, the amphisbema, the ammodite, and the basilisk. I shall quote some passages in a literal translation of Book 9 of the Pharsalia. In this body, Medusa's, it doesn't say, but that's what it's referring to. In this body, first did noxious nature produce deadly plagues. From those jaws, snakes poured forth, whizzing hisses with vibrating tongues, which, after the manner of a woman's hair flowing along the back, flapped about the very neck of the delighted Medusa. Upon her forehead, turned towards you erect, did serpents rise, and vipers' venom flowed from her combed locks. What avails a basilisk being pierced by the spear of the wretched Morus? Swift flies the poison along the weapon and fastens upon the hand, which instantly with sword unsheathed he smites, and at the same moment, severs it entirely from the arm. And looking upon the dreadful warning of a death his own, he stands in safety, his hand perishing. The basilisk dwelled, like other serpents, in the desert. Or, more accurately, it made the desert. Wherever it lived, birds fell dead at its feet, and the earth's fruits blackened and rotted. The water of the streams where it quenched its thirst remained poisoned for centuries. That its mere glance split rocks and burned grass has been attested by Pliny. Of all animals, the weasel alone was unaffected by the monster, and could be counted on to attack it on sight. It was also believed that the crowing of a rooster sent the basilisk scurrying. The seasoned traveler was careful to provide himself with either a caged rooster or a weasel before venturing into unknown territory. Another weapon was the mirror. Its own image would strike the basilisk dead. Yes, its virulence could bounce back and rebound upon itself. Isidore of Seville and the compilers of the Speculum Triplex, or the threefold mirror to you, rejected Lucan's fables and sought a rational explanation for the basilisk's origin. They could not deny its existence, since the Vulgate translates the Hebrew word tsepha, the name of a poisonous reptile, as cockatrice. The theory that gained most favor was that of a misshapen egg laid by a cock and hatched by a snake or a toad. Well, in the 17th century, the great Sir Thomas Brown, M.D., found this explanation as far-fetched as the monster itself. At much the same time, Quevedo wrote his romance, The Basilisk, in which we read, Si esta vivo quien te vio, toda su historia es mentira, pues si no murió, te ignora, y si murió, no lo afirma. If the man who saw you is still alive, your whole story is a lie, since if he has not died, he cannot have seen you, and if he has died, he cannot tell what he saw.
Land in the dust at their feet, like, put it on, nobody wants to see that. But yeah, the female side of that is called Daisy Duncan.
Yes, we've been here
in
before.
Burning Man, Ringo.
Women with no Daisy pants. Duck,
that cartoon character.
Somehow they can pull it off, fiance, so to speak, more easily than the males can.
Laid the eggs that Huey, Dewey, and Louie came out of.
Now we speak of the biology of cuddly, cute little cartoon characters who generally don't wear pants anyway.
These minor cartoon characters. Woody
At least
Peckers,
Mickey Netflix, Mouse and Goofy wear pants, but Donald Duck, not so much. Head. Nor does
How
Huey, Dewey, or Louie.
Mouse
nor does Daisy.
Morty and Ferdy, no doubt.
Yeah, those little characters wear pants.
Minnie Mouse. Anyway, these women would be naked below the waist, but extremely well-dressed above the waist, and you kind of got used to it. But it's a strange
fashion.
Fashion.
Yes.
Strange, a strange fashion. Fashion sense.
A fashion.
You know how it is when you're
yes.
human, you can get used to any
foolish humans.
So that happened, and we did a number of
yes,
shows.
Yes, humans are adaptable.
But I injured my back, and
it
so
still hurts.
I would get in the pool, and it would feel great. It would feel like, oh,
yeah.
my problem is gone.
Ooh.
Look, I can turn, I can twist,
great.
I can float,
yeah,
I can swim.
In the pool.
Then
yeah.
I'd get out, and gravity
Ow.
Would take its grip, and no, I'm not all right.
Ouch.
I can barely move.
Yikes.
And my trailer was the farthest away from the center of any trailer. You
Why the hell do they put it way out there?
And I was unsure of the layout, which is complicated. I would end
it's
up
complicated.
Along
at that nudist camp. They got
so
winding paths that go all
get
over
to the
place.
Trailer. I have to backtrack and rest and wheeze and gasp and so on.
Yeah, it
so
looks bad when everybody sees you limping and gimping around.
And, of course, I am, but the problem is that now I'm acting like it. I hope pretty soon I'll be doing jumping jacks and squat thrusts and whatever.
Jumping jacks.
Everybody liked this show. But what I didn't like is having to be helped on and off stage like I was the most frail 90-year-old.
You better get used to it, buddy. You're not getting any younger.
But I had...
Stop bitching about it and accept your
Chicken
fate.
John helped me on and off. I performed with a woman who calls herself the Unwoman, who plays the electric
cello. She's pretty
cello,
damn good, actually.
It's a cello you can hold in your hands. It looks something like a dulcimer. But she did it really
great. I tell you,
great,
she was no
she
Unwoman.
She supported me producing just the right sound effects, although we'd never rehearsed. I'd sure like to perform with her again. No, back at X Day, we would be lucky to get any kind of an audio accompaniment.
They'll all cry if you meet your
fell out of favor.
But if you don't,
I had to support
bring home the loot
on mine own.
Your family will.
Then would come the Slammity Bang youth groups with their
the Slammity Bang youth amplified.
They're still at it. Rubik's Pube.
Oh yes,
quite excellent.
They were
you know of them?
No, it's a lovely name.
Oh, well,
I do know one woman though.
The woman who is the singer in that is wonderful, charming.
We're speaking of
she was
Vanessa
one
from
of the highlights
Rubik's Pube, and not the Unwoman.
Nobody was a little snot, as so often happens when you go to these events.
Nobody
they couldn't afford to make it.
The trouble I see.
Didn't get to fly in.
So perhaps they were eliminated by COVID.
Perhaps, but
nobody knows
well,
the trouble
it was,
I
you know,
see.
One thing about a nudist camp is it's isolated. You're not in line with everyone else.
Sometimes
I'm mobility problems.
Sometimes
I'm the compound. And there are all sorts of nifty, weird reptile farms, dinosaur museums, and things all around.
Sometimes
next year, I'm gonna go. Or next year, I didn't.
Their attitude was,
I got COVID.
I never went, and they closed the nudist camp forever.
But no.
It's the 60s.
If I said, if I was talking about a hamburger or something, just in a metaphorical way, a hamburger would materialize at my elbow.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So these,
whatever you wanted, you could get.
Really took care of the old fossils.
Beautiful.
Me.
Dr. Hal, I'm wondering, so if the exists had arrived this year, would they have taken the nudists along too? Just for the hell of it?
Only if they were subgeniuses, but
right,
they would have
right.
taken the chief nudist, Xanthia Octoshroom, because she's
a passionate subgenius.
She has Bob tattooed on various parts of her anatomy.
She's got drawings by me
not
on some
of
parts of her anatomy.
Tattooed, and while we were there, she had our eye makeup tattooed on her eyelids.
Yeah, she's tattooed just about everywhere you can be tattooed. The eyelids were the last to go.
It's her place.
Are these Dobbs heads or the word Bob?
Dobbs heads.
That's great.
Bob
okay.
Dobbs. He's no
fool. Has she had them
Bob
done by
Dobbs,
different
no
artists?
Fool.
Or is it
no, that's more than
some genius
and her dad
he's super
on the
cool.
site and operates the Museum of Obsolete Camera Equipment, which took
neat.
Hours to go through. All the projectors and cameras and green screens.
There's
and
a dark and a shadow side of Bob.
All sorts of stuff.
Which every subgenius knows well.
Of land. It's at the nudist
if you see Bob Brown, well, that's got to get you down, because you will be down in some genius hell.
Land of kids.
So keep on the grinning side, always on the grinning side. Keep on the grinning side of Bob.
People weren't snapping pictures the way they usually do.
It will help with your career. Strangers will buy you a beer. If you keep on the grinning side of Bob.
Still, it was loads of fun. One of the most amazing.
There's a dead armadillo on the
was
road.
Was that after it rained?
And Bob's bumper, it hit it fair and square.
The next thing we knew, the ground was covered with walking catfish.
There's a twinkle in his eye. Not a beer as he drives by. Because mean old